with Harry Broadhurst and Tony Azzetta.
Gentlemen, May 5th, 2014, welcome to the Raw Reaction. I am Harry Broadhurst. You've already heard the voice. Let me officially welcome in Tony Acero. How are you, brother?
I'm doing great.
See, we're already smoother than we were last week.
Yep.
All right, everyone. Again, welcome into the Raw Reaction. This is for Raw, May 5th, 2014. And before we get started with Raw, I feel the need to go back to Extreme Rules. And I'm sure my broadcast colleague already knows where this is going. But
oh, yeah.
I'm not one to say I told you so or anything, but, well, yeah, you know.
Yes, a lot of my predictions were off. I mean, you know, most matches, I'm either right or wrong, you know, 50% odd. So I think I did all right.
I'm not saying you did bad. I mean, I think you got, what, 6 out of the 8?
Yeah. But, you know, the good news is the ones that I did get incorrectly were the ones that I actually wanted to go the way that you assumed they would. So I was pretty happy overall with the end result of the pay-per-view.
I agree. I had a chance to join TLD, JCM, and a couple of the other guys on the Extreme Rules Reaction show last night, and we got into a conversation about the show there, and I'll say the same thing here at the top of the show here as I did there. I actually thought it was a pretty solid pay-per-view or special event, whatever. And I think that a lot of the buzz coming out of that show and leading into tonight was the fact that they seem to be fully focused on the youth movement in the WWE right now.
Right. You know, I alluded to that in my column, The Wrestling 5-1, immediately after WrestleMania, that, you know, they the first Monday Night Raw after Mania, they weren't kidding around. They brought in new people. They brought in a new person tonight, which we'll get to later. I believe that they are fully invested in, I don't want to say taking over the old guard, but allowing the fans to welcome new people. And that's one of the smartest things that they should be doing because they're really bad at it, or they have been in the past. You know, and then you can still see signs of them not being able to do it correctly, such as with Rusev. But for the most part, we're getting characters instead of wrestlers, and I think that that's what you need in terms of relation. You need to relate to these people before you even see that they wrestle or not. Bray Wyatt is not that good a wrestler. He's improving, he's getting good, but it's his character that people are drawn to. And I think that a lot of that goes into people like Adam Rose, Bo Dallas, and a lot of the people that are coming up soon. So I'm pretty excited for the, what should we call it, the youth movement?
Well, WCW coined a term for it called New Blood Rising.
Let's not do anything that WCW did.
I was actually going to ask you, do you think that a new guard versus old guard storyline would work in this day and age?
I don't know if it would work or not. I just know that I have no interest in seeing it. It's too old hat. I mean, we saw it with the new breed in ECW, and that obviously didn't go too well. And I believe that they're capable of doing it. I just really want to see something new, and I think we're going to get something new. I hope we're going to get something new.
That's fair enough. All right, let's actually get to the show now. Let's talk about Raw.
Yes.
Volume 1 here, we touched on it already, the fact that yours truly won 8 out of 8 last night at Extreme Rules, no big deal. But we'll open with the Shield victory last night and how it played into tonight's episode. And specifically, we'll talk about Dean Ambrose in the opening segment of tonight's Raw. Well, the opening first two segments, actually, because it went into the commercial and then finished after the first commercial break there. Ambrose dropping the United States title to Sheamus. Do you think it was the right decision?
I want to say no. I believe that that's more of a fan inside of me than any actual analyst. I like Dean Ambrose. I like him as the U.S. champion. However, what has he really done? Does he really need it? The answer to both of those questions gives me the answer to whether or not he should have lost it. He hasn't done much with it, and he doesn't need it. So, yes, I don't mind him losing. Losing to Sheamus is another yes and no, wherein it's Sheamus. I don't believe he needs it as well. But at the same time, similar to what his promo said, he's kind of just been spinning his wheels. So if this gives him something to use or utilize as some sort of future program with someone else, then I don't mind it. Who else was going to take it, believably?
I actually think that the victory by Sheamus tonight is going to be the catalyst towards the start of the rumored Sheamus heel turn. And the reason I say that is because think about the last question that Renee asked Sheamus about if he had anything to say to Dean Ambrose. And the exact
right.
quote that he had was, "No hard feelings, fella." Now,
yeah.
a traditional babyface would be more likely to offer Ambrose a rematch anytime he wanted it with a fair fight. But Sheamus is kind of like, hey, I got the belt. What are you going to do about it,
Yeah. Well, Sheamus can only go so far as a face. He came back as a face. He was extremely stagnant, to begin with. I don't know if you saw, I believe you did see it because it was on the Yes, Yes, Yes page, which, by the way, people, feel free to join if you haven't. We are growing, continuing to grow, and it's an amazing group. People do not spell things incorrectly for the most part. There's no dumb questions, and if there are, I delete them really quickly. Spam is almost non-existent. It's just a really good place to go. So go to Facebook, search in groups, or just search Yes, 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 and join us for a lot of good conversation. Back to Sheamus. Yeah, there was a picture of Triple H with a smug face, and behind him was Sheamus holding the belt up. And as funny as that was, because it's a little bit of an asshole move, I really hope that people don't take that to heart in terms of Sheamus' ability to just be interesting again. I never really signed on to the idea that, Triple H's workout buddy is getting the push and whatnot, because I believe that Sheamus is a great person in the ring, on the mic for the most part, and a good character. So I think what he's gotten, he's deserved, even if he has gotten a little bit of an edge for knowing Triple H.
Yeah, I think that actually does have a little bit to do with it. I mean, a lot of times in this business, and it's a lot worse on the independent scene than it is up in the major companies, but it's not what you know, it's who you know. Now, that
yeah.
being said, I'm actually a fan of Sheamus's work. I think that given his size and given the fact that he grew up in a style that's not familiar to most American fans, he's actually adjusted quite well to the WWE style. So I don't have any issues with Sheamus holding the belt. At the same time, I think Sheamus is above the United States title, but if it gives him something to do, then I think that'll help refreshing his character, especially if it does lead to the heel turn that has been previously mentioned.
Yeah, and for all we know, this may be leading to someone else taking it from him, which would give them a push more so than Sheamus, which, is always a good thing. That's how things are supposed to work.
Right, and it'll get the wheel started for Sheamus going forward instead of, as you said, him mentioning that he was just basically spinning his wheel since he returned at the Rumble after
yeah.
having, what was it, like 7-month torn labrum or something, was it? Something like that, I think.
Possibly. Yeah, so it was a decision that was like neither good nor bad, but it's one of those where we might have to see exactly where it's going to go. Hey, Terry, did I lose you?
I'm sorry, I'm still here. I had a bit of a switchboard issue there.
That's all right. It happens. People, it happens. But yeah, no, so what we, you know, the original, you know, content of what we were speaking about was basically the Shield and how Ambrose was, first he lost the United States title, and then after that we had Triple H come out and, you know, give him a little wag of the finger.
Do you want to touch on the Shield Wyatt match now, or do you want to save that for a little bit later on in the show?
No, let's start with the end. Why not, you know?
All right, then, yeah, the match was made for later in the night, the six-man tag match as the Shield took on the Wyatts, and we were discussing it on the Yes Forum. As Tony said, it's the place where we frequent most. You can also join Pro Wrestling Powerhouse on Facebook as well by searching Pro Wrestling Powerhouse in the search forum. And Triple H came out and made what amounted to Shield and Wyatts 4. Very good match. Obviously, the distraction ending takes away from it a little bit. It brings it down a peg from the Elimination Chamber match, I think. But the obvious chemistry between those six men just make it amazing anytime they're in the ring together in any way, shape, form, or fashion, be it one-on-one matches, be it tag matches, be it the six-man tags that we've been getting.
Yeah, that match was awesome. The Shield has gone from a team in which one person stands out to a team in which all three are standing out for different reasons, and that is very hard to do, yet they've continued to do so in an amazing way. You know, the Reigns is obviously the one that they want to mold into something great. However, when Ambrose got into the ring, he was like this house of fire that went with the fact that he was pissed off that he lost his belt. And the little things that he did, like bouncing off of the rope into a move, immediately following Rowan and hitting a clothesline, these are things that people just don't do. And if they did do it, it's been years since I've seen it done. You know, the short clothesline immediately after, like, I think the only person that does something remotely close to that is Curtis Axel, and it looks extremely choreographed. This looked like Ambrose was just pissed. And it was awesome. And then Rollins gets in there, and he does his stuff, and he's flipping all around. And again, it doesn't look choreographed. It looks like this is a response to the Wyatts as they are as a unit. So the match in its entirety worked out well. The ending was there for a reason. And even though it deterred a little bit from the match rating, if that's what we want to go by, it didn't deter from the scene and the storyline as a whole. I thought it was great.
One of the things I want to touch on there, too, goes back to what you mentioned there with Rollins coming in and doing all of his crazy diving stuff there. We saw Seth, and I pointed this out, we saw Seth bust out a new move tonight, too. So the thing I like about when he did the standing shooting star press, and the thing I like about that is that these guys are constantly expanding their moveset. They're bringing more and more to their matches, which is something that, technically speaking, it's goes along the lines of what Triple H was saying, that you either adapt or perish. You can actually see the Shield evolving in terms of their in-ring ability as well as they go forward in the WWE.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll throw Ambrose into that same category. But the dude just keeps doing new shit that, I mean, you know, he was suicide diving with along with Rollins. Like, they were a team. They were the smaller guys who, you know, dove over the ropes for everybody else and to catch. And, I mean, we've seen him do it before, but it was just a sense of he was literally doing whatever he could to beat some ass. And it goes not only with them as a unit, but the storyline that they were telling tonight, which is, I think, of all the wrestlers, Ambrose really gets it. And that's really key because it's the little things that create longevity for a character and for a wrestler.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that they actually had him under a developmental deal once before and he didn't get anywhere, because he's obviously made the most of it since he's been back under one, and now that he's gotten the call-up up to the WWE as well.
Yeah, the man continues to impress me, and I see nothing but big things from him. You know, I only know vaguely of where he comes from, and I know that a lot of it is that wrestling that a lot of people frown upon and whatnot, but that's really irrelevant towards what he's been doing now, because I find it invigorating in terms of in-ring style. And not only that, but let's not take away credit from the Wyatt family as a whole as well. They're also growing. Harper, Rowan, I mean, Rowan's growing at a snail's pace, but he's still a part of something that's a little bit bigger than he is, so that helps him. You know, they're a part of the dance too, and they did just as good as the Shield, I think.
Oh, absolutely. You can clearly tell that if not Bray himself, because Bray's obviously going to be a big deal for a long time to come. You can definitely tell that the fans are reacting more and more to Luke Harper every time he comes into the ring.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely the sleeper of the team.
I think it's soda time.
Yes, I did want to bring up the long-time readers of me will know that Ryback as a character I have completely disliked since the beginning. I hate wrestlers that are brought up with squash matches, I hate inconsistencies, and I hate asinine storylines, and Ryback has been a part of all of that. And in recent months, he's been really boring in the ring and out of the ring, and I believe it was this one moment where he was on commentary last week or the week beforehand, and it was actually pretty impressive. He sounded knowledgeable, funny, and it really worked for him. This week, he had a match with Cody Rhodes, and I was impressed. I haven't seen him move that fluidly, and I believe a lot of it goes to Cody, but I hadn't seen him move that well or at least seem motivated to do something, you know, resembling an actual good match. He won. They're adding to the Cody and Goldust storyline. But even the float off of the top rope into the shell shock looked good. I got to hand it to Ryback. At least tonight, he did pretty well.
I completely agree with you, because I was going to touch on that finishing move myself there. While the way that Cody might have gotten off, knocked off the ropes looked a little bit sketchy, let's be honest here.
Yeah.
The fact that Ryback was able to single-handedly, fluidly flow that right into catching Cody into the late capture and then dropping back into the shell shock looked really good from the camera angle that they showed.
Yeah, it looked great. And I'll agree, you know, bumping into a ring post shouldn't cause someone to lose their balance. But I'll take it, I suppose, just because it ended up being something pretty cool. I'll allow it this week.
So we've heard the rumors of Goldust and Cody Rhodes having a match for years.
Yeah,
I'm going to make an official prediction right now.
What's your prediction?
We see Goldust and Cody at SummerSlam.
Okay.
Agree, disagree, thoughts?
I think that the time has passed in terms of when it would be at its peak, which was WrestleMania. I think a lot of people would have cared. But if you're not going to do it at WrestleMania, SummerSlam is, I believe, the number two pay-per-view in terms of visibility and card, impact. You know, I would say my second favorite is probably Royal Rumble, but in terms of media outlets and how they've built the SummerSlam pay-per-view and the fact that it's in L.A., which is, you know, roughly 20 minutes away from where I live, I would enjoy it. I would completely enjoy it. I think that I'm not sure who's going to be the heel here. Probably Cody. I assume he can handle it better. But they have to be careful, because if they take too long, if they give it a slow burn, it may not go the way they want it to. And like I said, they already lost a lot of the luster that they had leading into WrestleMania.
I think that there's something that they can do to bring the luster back.
Okay.
Would you have any interest in Dusty being involved in the angle in any way, shape, or form?
You bring Dusty on the mic, man, and I'm all for it. The dude is still gold. You know, he has not gone the route of Ric Flair and Piper quite yet. He's still got it. So yeah, I would enjoy him.
The reason I say that I think Goldust and Cody happens at SummerSlam here is you have to factor in that SummerSlam is going to be in mid-August.
Yes.
Right around the time that they're going to lose a lot of the original subscribers from the WWE Network launch in February. So you got to think that we're going to get an amazingly stacked show for SummerSlam in order for them to try to keep as many people around from that original six-month trial as they can.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't think that far ahead. That's amazing that you do. Like I said, this is a great team, mainly because you think of the crap that I have no interest in thinking about. From a business mindset, it makes perfect sense. You know, you got to bring in as many viewers. And I do believe SummerSlam is a card that's always stacked They're going to add as much as they can to it. They're going to continue to do so. It's not going to stop. So, yeah, I think Dusty, as an integral part of it, would be completely welcomed and pretty awesome.
Looks like we've hit the first commercial here.
Yep.
You want to pick the song, Tony?
Sure, why not? Let's get a little bit of a break here. You know, I never was a fan of the man, but I'll allow it. So let's go.
I'm an ass man. Yeah, I'm an ass man.
Again, Harry Broadhurst joined by Tony Acero. Tony, I think it's about that time.
Yes, I believe so. We're going to have to pay some bills, guys. I'm going to let Harry do the talking because he's a little bit more better at it.
You're goddamn right.
Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio is your sponsor here. We want to thank Jersey J for the opportunity as well. If you missed it last week, you can check out the debut episode of the Raw Reaction as well. In addition to catching things like the Greg DeMarco Show, the Thursday Night Destruction, Heartbeat Radio on Sundays with Bruce Hart, as well as your pay-per-view reaction show on blogtalkradio.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. Actually, I think it's /PWP Radio. But I'm sure if you search Pro Wrestling Powerhouse on blogtalkradio.com, you'll find us too. So, you know, there's that.
And for those of you that are listening, I do want you to know, I am a Greg DeMarco guy.
He only said it 6 times in the debut episode, so he had to get him at least 1 tonight.
Yes, at least. Yes.
You're welcome!
Tony's a writer for 411 Mania. I work for Black Diamond Wrestling and Real Action Pro Wrestling. You can find 411 Mania, obviously, 411mania.com/wrestling. You can search Real Action Pro Wrestling and Black Diamond Wrestling on Facebook. I should probably work on getting an actual website out there to plug for these guys, too. I'll have to talk to my bosses and work on that. In addition, Tony's mentioned it before, you can join us for conversation on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse on Facebook. You can also join us at Yes, 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 which is kind of my baby because I'm the one that created it a couple years ago, and it's amazing for me to see what it's grown into. Any other plugs that you can think of, Tony?
Yeah, you know, the Yes, Yes, Yes page has grown faster than a boner at a porn convention, seriously. But in terms of the my writing for 411media.com, I do want to pontificate on the fact that I am the writer at 411media.com. I am the shit. So come on by and read my shit. I do the Raw Report, which means that I have to watch it, so I know what I'm talking about now. I have the Wrestling 5-1, which is full of hot chicks and opinions. I frequently guest star in Factor Fiction and a lot of the other columns. Whenever Larry needs some coverage, I'm usually there to handle it. So if you love me, you know who I am. If you hate me, you know who I am. If you don't know who I am, then what the hell are you doing here?
It reminds me of the old Diamond Dallas Page line. They will love me. They will hate me. They will never forget me.
Yes.
You look thirsty, Tony.
Yes, I am quite thirsty. A little bit parched, actually. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Wyatt promo on Monday night. Now, we spoke last week about his ability to cut a promo and how he is above and beyond many of the superstars that are there now and even in the past. However, this week, I wasn't worried per se about what he was saying. I was a little bit more worried about the length and the point of it all. Maybe this is going to lead to something in the following weeks. Maybe it is. Maybe it is just a way to keep John Cena's name in the spotlight, which makes no sense because it's always in the spotlight. But the Wyatt sounded almost like a martyr, which is what he's going for, and the irony is supposed to be the fact that he actually isn't one. And it works from a storyline standpoint. But the thing is, It seemed to go on a little bit longer than usual today. And this is a minor critique because the Wyatt is still amazing, you know. But in terms of something to talk about and something to strike a little bit of conversation between myself and you and any callers that are listening, you know, if you want to call in and talk about it as well, the number is 760-888-5749. More than happy to argue with you or allow you to agree with me. I feel that it was a little bit too long. And I want to see where it goes, but I believe maybe they're just doing it to follow up because you couldn't just end the pay-per-view and then have them fight the Shield with no connector.
I think the reason that the Bray promo went as long as it did is to make up for the fact that Cena wasn't there tonight.
Yeah.
And you touched on that briefly in order to keep Cena in everybody's mind in regards to his storyline with Bray, because it's obviously not over now that they're even at one match each. You got to think that Payback will probably be the closing call for them.
Well, considering it's called Payback, I'm sure there's going to be a few rematches.
Of course. That used to be what Backlash was all about anyways.
Right.
But as far as you were saying with the Bray promo, I actually enjoyed the length of it. I thought that it was appropriately themed for what it was. The one thing that Bray's going to have to stop doing is I think he needs to stop announcing the name of the city before they come out. Because that comes off as almost a babyface-ish kind of move to me. Because it's something that he seems to be doing in order to draw a reaction, which I don't agree with. I don't think that it's necessarily something that he should be doing, that the character would be doing. I think that with Bray's character, it's more of a let people naturally come to him. Don't try to force anything with them.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the unfortunate truth about the WWE is that they're going to force everything, which is why the song, "He's Got the Whole World in His Hand," is now, you know, used every single week ad nauseum instead of just a little bit of a mention or a little bit of a calling card of Wyatt. You got the end of the pay-per-view or the end of Cena match where he's, you know, got a little kid, which was really creepy and cool. It's just the fact that the song is now being, I believe, overused, and we're going to get that. You know, I hate it. I believe that anytime something catches on, they want to force it. They want to make it happen. And I was really worried about why it would fall into that trap. He's been one of the few that is able to survive it. So I think he'll be able to hold on to that. But I do agree with you in terms of them forcing it a little bit.
The other thing that I wanted to touch on here is I have a huge gathering of people that I usually get together with for the pay-per-views. So one of the things that we thought was funny is that almost 6 or 7 years after he was fired, we finally found little Johnny.
Oh, did we?
Somewhere Heidenreich broke every piece of furniture he's ever owned.
Yeah, well, I like to leave little things like that out of my personal wrestling almanac.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I want to talk about the fact that what you said about why, how they're, you know, he's got to stop saying the name, how they're trying to give him a little bit of a face reaction when he's a heel. And what I thought was interesting is we read a report, I want to say, 6 months ago about them trying to make more of a tweener role for a lot of the wrestlers, and I don't think they're going that route with Wyatt, but it did immediately remind me of Cesaro, how tonight for the past couple of weeks I've seen complaints about Cesaro's still a face, or he's still getting face reactions, blah, 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 and it doesn't work with Heyman as the manager. Would you say that tonight, when he attacked RVD after the bell, was that more of an official heel turn, or was it just trying to give him a bit more of an attitude or an edge? What did you think about that segment?
I thought that the segment was really well done there, and one of the things about it was you could see a more aggressive streak coming out in Cesaro, whereas it took Heyman to control him, much like Lana has to do for Rusev, which was the only thing that I thought was a little weird, that it was the manager that finally pulled him away, and they're already doing that kind of thing with Rusev. And you would think that Cesaro, I mean, United Banks of Switzerland, not that he's officially announced his exit from there, though, you would think that an intelligent man like Cesaro would know the line that he can and can't cross as far as what he can and can't get away with in a post-match attack.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think that they're trying to give him more of an edge. I'm not saying they listen to our complaints. Greg and I do still stand by the fact that they listen to the Greg DeMarco show. So, but in terms of actuality, I believe that they realize that Heyman is a heat magnet, and Cesaro is just kind of by his side, and they're trying to give him more of an edge, because what's he doing right now? You know, which isn't a bad thing per se, but he's going to need some sort of direction soon.
Agreed, and I think that the feud with Van Damme actually kind of gives him one, because I don't think that this will be the end of it. I sit and talk to everybody that's on the Yes page during the show. I try to stay active in the Raw thread. I know that you're busy doing the 411 article, so you can't. But I try to stay active with everybody in the Raw thread on Yes, and one of the things that we were pointing out is the fact that Cesaro and Van Damme could go forward as well into looking at a potential match for Payback as a way to get Van Damme on the card and a way to get Cesaro a big-name singles victory on the card, which is, I think, where they're going to go with this, because we don't know how long Van Damme's going to be around for this time, whereas Cesaro is somebody that they seem to want to hitch their wheels to along the lines of a guy like a Roman Reigns that we've had speculated before.
Right. Well, if that's the case, where does Swagger go? Because he just got tossed out of the ring like nobody's business from a debuting superstar.
Well, the thought for me for that would be Sheamus, but apparently Swagger's going to be going into the thing with Adam Rose, which kind of brings me to my big point for the evening.
You like how I did that, Harry? You like how I did that?
That was a thought fall, Tony. let's go into Harry Pitt, shall we?
Sure, let's do it.
Adam Rose. Can I say this without being vilified by the IWC? I was disappointed. I think Rose has the potential to be something serious. I think there is a lot of potential with the gimmick. I think the fact that you could hear the fans doing the whoa, in the background after his music stopped and he started talking to Zeb Coulter in the ring, that they're going to have something with Adam Rose. I don't think that saying that he's coming to Raw and then doing the obvious setup for the match there and then not having him actually wrestle so that the fans could see what he could do tonight was the right decision. unless the only way that I could see them doing that is if they're trying to save Adam Rose's official debut for like a payback. And I think putting him on a pay-per-view stage when he's debuting with the gimmick is probably not the best decision either, because fans are going to want to have some kind of idea as to how they're supposed to react to him without it having to be his first ever singles match on a special event. That's my thought on it. Tony?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the comments in the Raw report were like, oh, so he's a face, or, you know, he's going out there to cut off Zeb Coulter and everything. So they thought they were going to get a Russell Brand douchey type of character. And maybe it'll go to that. Maybe we just don't know. But immediately when he came out, you know, sucking on a lollipop, you know, I just had one thought.
You have a vagina!
And I just couldn't let it go. So I just, you know, I had to really, I mean, I hadn't been interested in his character since the offset, which isn't to say that it's a bad thing. I was apathetic towards it all. We're like, okay, we're debuting a new guy. This is cool. I remember him as Kruger when I, you know, watched NXT for a while, and I saw potential, and I still do see potential. He's got a little bit of a rat face, but we'll work with it. I don't think that was a good debut. I think it was too short. I think it was with someone that nobody cares about in Swagger. Zeb, yes. Swagger, not so much. It was a little bit too, I don't know, the way it was set up, and maybe this is IWC's fault, but the way it was set up is that this was going to be a big deal, and it was bad placement on the show. It wasn't in the right time frame, and it just kind of, okay, well, that was that, you know, so what's next?
Not to mention the fact that Michael Cole was completely nerding out kind of killed it for me as well.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, we can talk for an hour and a half on how much I hate the announce team, particularly Michael Cole, especially when they're laughing on the side about something. It really bothers me, and honestly, I just...
Anybody got time for that?
You're really going deep into the switchboard for this one, aren't you?
Well, you know, Greg told me that I have this thing where I have a little bit of an addiction. The first episode, I wanted to let people hear our voice, let them know that, you know, we actually are a little bit serious about this. But now that, you know, we're here, I'm just going to run with it.
You ready to take it to our second commercial break, Tony?
You know what, sure, let's take a little bit of a break. We'll be back shortly, and then we'll close it up, you know, do a little bit of talk about one segment overall that I just, you know, wasn't too much of a fan of. We'll talk to you soon.
We'll be right back here on Power House Radio. We'll be right back.
Tony Fassero.
All right. Did you guys hear AJ?
I miss her so much.
All right, so my third due is and pertains to the new Intercontinental Champion, Wade Barrett, or Bad News Barrett, as I believe he's known now. I will continue to call him Wade because I like shortening stuff as much as possible. The boy won the belt, and he got his rematch, or Big E got his rematch tonight. And, you know, they had a pretty damn good match, I think. Big E showed a little bit more of an aggressive streak, and I don't know, maybe that's, you know, leading towards a future heel turn, or maybe it's just him being pissed off for losing the belt. Either way, it was a pretty solid match, I think, throughout. Wade is a character that, I mean, that shit should not work for anybody. Standing on a podium and bringing bad news to the world, it's cheesy, it's borderline, you know, retarded, but Barrett made it work. He brought it to the big stage, and I think he's doing extremely well with it. He's got the right smug look, the smug attitude. I mean, he's from across the pond, so he's smug automatically. No offense. So I believe it's fun. He cheated to win. Perfect heel move. Nothing wrong here. I think that he deserves my applause, so I'm going to give it to him.
I'm completely with you on Bad News Barrett. The gimmick has no right getting as over as it has already, let alone the fact that it's taken away back to the Intercontinental title. The big thing for me with Barrett, and especially now that Sheamus is the U.S. champion, is I'm glad to see that it's entirely possible that we might be seeing a refocusing on the secondary titles, which is, I think, something that has been missing from WWE television for, well, basically forever now.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, I mean, we've seen Sheamus and Barrett, you know, go one-on-one, and, man, they're some hard hitters. So, like, I'm not looking for a unification. I know a lot of people are or wouldn't mind if there was one. Nothing on that. Just seeing those two battle each other as supremacy of the titles, which one's better, which one means more, blah, blah, blah. They could do that for a month or two before they get into their own little number one contenders, and it would be awesome. They beat each other's asses a couple weeks ago, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I would almost be tempted to see them, like, to do an overseas three-way. Have Barrett, Sheamus, and Cesaro all in the same ring just trading European uppercuts.
Yeah, that'd be something to see. Do you think they'll point out at all the fact that we have a United States champion who is Irish?
I think that's going to come into it, and I think that's going to be one of Sheamus' main talking points, especially if the turn does happen, is the fact
right.
that how does it feel for all of you guys to know that your champion isn't from this country?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's cliche, but it could work. Sheamus could make it work. He'll just tell another story about how, you know, the Irish were better and whatnot, and as long as you don't mention potatoes, he'll do just fine.
Oh, God, the potato promo from SmackDown. There's only one thing to say about that, Tony.
Damn!
Yes, yes. Good old Farouk. Yeah, so, I believe that that Wade as champion is a good thing. Like I said last week, it sucks that Big E had to lose it in order to get there, but he's young, he's strong, he's got plenty of potential, way more than Wade had at the time, because Wade was running out of air, running out of time. He was about to hit a wall that he'd never hop over. So I think it was the right decision, and they gave him his rematch. He won it. He's going to continue to cut good promos. I'm interested to see where he goes next.
I completely agree. Looking forward to seeing what's next for Bad News Barrett as well. I think that there might be a further rematch with Big E coming up due to the fact that Barrett went to the eyes going into the finish tonight. But
uh-huh.
after he finishes off Big E once and for all, I am interested to see where they take Barrett next with the Intercontinental title. I'm completely on board with you with that.
Okay. Now, if he does get a rematch and it is at the pay-per-view, then that's a possibility of having an Intercontinental Championship rematch, possibly Bray Wyatt and John Cena. Kane and Daniel Bryan looks like it's going to happen. There's going to be some semblance of the Evolution versus the Shield. If this pay-per-view is essentially a rematch city, is it something that you're interested in getting? Do you think the stories are going to be compelling enough to allow that to happen, or is this a bad idea?
I think a lot of it will have to depend on what they do with the matches themselves, and especially given the fact that they do have a full month to get there,
right,
which is a rarity in this time and age, because usually we got used to the time frame where it used to be a pay-per-view every 2 or 3 weeks, but now that they've gone back down to 13 a year, they're able to space them out a little bit better, which is something as a fan I appreciate.
Yeah, and let me ask you this. As a way better historian than I will ever be in terms of wrestling and shows that we've seen, is it me, or was the past more of an area in time where storylines had a little bit more time to embellish, and there were rematches, and there were, like, this match, such and such versus such and such, 4, 5, 6, and because I don't see anything wrong with that, per se, and that's why I asked the question regarding the rematches. If the storyline is there, and I don't see anything wrong with, a 4 or 5-match series as long as it's compelling and not boring. So, I mean, am I having a, looking back with rose-colored glasses, or was that true? Was there a lot more longevity to storylines and the ability to have trade wins and losses and still be relevant in terms of status on opponent versus opponent?
Well, I seem to remember, let's take it back to 2000 here, and the WWE is under the booking of one Chris Kresge. And I seem to remember things like Benoit and Jericho going 4, 5, 6 months. Rock, Triple H, Angle, 3, 4 months. Things
yes.
like that in the undercard as well. The extended run into the slow burn with China and Eddie Guerrero, where they had China and Eddie Guerrero involved in each other's business basically all the way from Backlash up until Eddie beat China for the belt on a TV episode, and actually even going further than that, when China played an important role in Eddie dropping the Intercontinental title to Billy Gunn, whose music we heard earlier.
Right. Yeah. So I'm not going crazy with the idea or the notion that the storylines that long. I mean, I don't know. Maybe then in 2000, I remember just being a fan. I had, I had been a fan for years before that, but it's just the fact that in terms of getting the IWC mentality on, I had barely started wearing that hat. So it was compelling to me, and it wasn't boring in the least. It wasn't something where I was like, oh, they're fighting again? It was like, hell yeah, they're fighting again, such and such lost. He needs to get his win back or whatever. And similar to, sports, they have rivalries that last for years, there's people that just want to see certain football teams go head-to-head and can't wait till it happens again. Now, granted, sometimes that's an entire season apart, but in terms of wrestling, I think that there's very little wrong in terms of seeing another rematch or two, as long as it's not just they know that that's going to happen. Similar to Backlash immediately after WrestleMania, it was almost a joke where we just knew it was going to happen. This seems a little bit more organic, where the storyline just isn't done, and I could really appreciate that mentality going into Payback.
No, I'm completely with you there, and the only thing is you just have to make sure that you keep the rematches to a point where they don't come to a point of overburdens, where it's not a case of really, again, like, think about tables, ladders, and chairs in the title unification match with Cena and Orton. Nobody cared anymore. Just because we had seen them go at it so many times already that, oh, it's Cena and Orton again. It doesn't really matter if it's tables, ladders, and chairs. It's still Cena and Orton.
Right.
And then again at the Royal Rumble, which I think is a lot of what had to do with the Pittsburgh crowd going crazy on the match at the Royal Rumble. Just, it was their way of saying, no, we're done with these guys facing each other. We want something new.
Yeah. And I think that is that's not necessary. That's more so the players than everybody else, which is something that, John Cena has always been stale to a majority of the crowd, and Randy Orton was just getting there. So yeah, I agree. You can't oversaturate it with them. But I think we're in a good place right now with all of the other supposed rematches that look to be coming up.
Absolutely, I'm with you there. And as you said, a lot of the rematches that are look to be coming up here seem to be happening organically, except for one, and we'll get to that here in a few moments.
Yeah, because let's get to that.
We'll get to that here, but I got one thing to touch on real quick. It's the second episode of Harry's Hit here for tonight's Raw Reaction. What is with everybody losing their names?
Yeah.
First, it was Big E. He lost his Langston. Then Cesaro lost his Antonio. And now apparently Rusev has lost his Alexander. Is there like a special place in the WWE storage facility up in Stamford where these names go to hang out and interact with each other now that they're not coming on TV anymore? And if so, is it entirely possible that coming soon to NXT will be Alexander Antonio Langston?
It's a big possibility. No, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's just something as simple as T-shirt sales, you know? Less letters you have to pay for, or it's marketability, you know, just the ease of one name, you know, I mean, Madonna, Prince, you know, I don't, Big E, I thought Big E Langston was a pretty cool name. I didn't mind Antonio Cesaro since, you know, we share that name. Rusev, I mean, he's just one of those characters that, similar to Ryback when he first started, I didn't really care about, so him dropping a name doesn't matter, he just don't drop that blonde. But yeah, I do see where you're going with that. I mean, you know, thankfully these names aren't as generic as, you know, some of the names used to be. But, I mean, maybe the fact that they can drop that means that they're I don't know. I guess you would seriously have to ask somebody in terms of what reason they would have to drop it or what reason would they have to keep it. Like, what is it a marketing thing? Is it something different than that?
Well, my issue with that, with it being a potential marketing thing, is that if it's going to come down to that, why give him the name in the first place? Why not just call him Rusev when he comes up? Why not just call him Cesaro when he came up? I think Cesaro had more to do with the rebranding of the character, so that one I'm a little bit more okay with. But as you said, Big E Langston flowed naturally.
Yeah.
And I like the way Alexander Rusev sounded, especially because it gave him the opportunity to do the full Russian script for his Chiron as well. Whereas now they're just putting Rusev in the Chiron, and it looks generic.
Yeah, the single name thing is I mean, in the grand scheme of things, maybe it's not that big of a deal. But in terms of like, I believe they're doing it for marketability. Doesn't necessarily mean I agree with it because it's similar to what I said earlier. They're trying to build a character, but at the same time, you don't want to lose that person in the character. You know, Bray Wyatt, still Bray Wyatt. They're not calling him Wyatt. They're not calling him Bray. You know, so I don't believe there's too much wrong with keeping Alexander, especially because it's a name that holds some sort of weight with the character that he is.
Right, due to the importance of like, Alexander the Great as far as Russia goes.
Yeah.
Oh, and as far as Lana goes?
You're welcome!
Yes. Her name backwards is
Everybody gets one. Two for two, Tony.
Yeah. That'll be similar to Killer or Relic.
It's a good thing you got away from that as quick as possible because I was going to go on a huge Johnny Stamboli tirade. All right, let's talk about Raw
Part 3. Yes, let's get to the end of our show here where we talk about a storyline that you know, before the pay-per-view had some semblance of potential, was an interesting, you know, way to get Daniel Bryan a competitor that was believable, gave Kane a bit of an edge back, you know, took away the tie, put on the mask and everything, and it resulted in a pretty good match at the pay-per-view, and then we come to tonight.
Before we get to tonight, I'm going to give them credit. I thought the flaming table bump last night at Extreme Rules was really impressive. It came out of nowhere. And it's something that fans are going to talk about to talk to other people in order to get them interested. Hey, did you hear about what happened at Extreme Rules? Guy went through a flaming table. Really? Where's the video? It's something that they can use for word of mouth to like a casual violence fan. At least in my opinion there, but yes, let's get to tonight.
Yeah, no, I think the match at Extreme Rules was definitely something that you would play in a video game more so than see on TV, and that is a compliment, not an insult. But yes, tonight, tell me why my favorite part of this entire overarching storyline was Stephanie McMahon. I don't like her. I find her overbearing, a horrible actress, and just really bad. But her continued use of her being overhanded and heavy-handed and, like, constantly scaring Brie and Brian, I thought was hilarious. Especially the car moment, which is like, sorry, it's just this heavy hand. Like, it was. I thought that was the best part. Everything else was cheesy as shit, including and resulting in the end where the car wouldn't start because there was a wire missing. There was a wire. Come on, Brian. Like, you lift the hood and you connect something and that's literally it? Like, what was it? What? No, I mean, you add that Kane holding onto the sunroof. They take way too long to start the car. Kane's just kind of hanging there like, what the hell's going on? They drive off. He falls. Brian stops the car, looks, and sees Kane fall in such a way that he is just perfectly aligned so that he can do the, oh, I'm up again, you know. And it all came off as hokey. It all came off as dumb. It was retarded. I didn't like it. I don't think that Brian needs to be afraid of Kane. I really don't, considering he beat him. There should be no fear. There should be nothing that scares him, especially considering the fact that we've had an underdog storyline for the past several months. Why is he all of a sudden afraid of someone that he's beaten? It's just I'm not going to go so far to say that they're neutering Brian. I'm not trying to say that they're ruining his title reign. I believe that had circumstances not happened to affect Brian, such as a wedding and a funeral, then we'd be somewhere slightly different. But at the same time, the storyline that they have going right now is just – it's borderline ridiculous.
I think the words that I would use are completely asinine.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is, as you said there, when it came down to it, Extreme Rules, World Heavyweight title on the line, WWE World Heavyweight, whatever they want to call it nowadays, and Brian gets the job done clean as a sheet. Counters Kane off of the apron into the flaming table and then pins him in the middle of the ring with, I'm sorry, it's still goat to sleep to me. It's funny. But, so now they're having Brian and Brie running around scared backstage on Raw before any of the car shenanigans happen. It's like you said, what possible reason does Brian have to be scared of Kane at this point, knowing that even when the monster was at his worst, when the monster literally tried to burn him alive, he was able to get the upper hand in the whole situation. The car bit was ridiculous. My girlfriend doesn't even watch wrestling often, and she was watching it tonight, and she pointed out how incredibly stupid it looked and how bad the acting was. As you said, the bit about Stephanie being heavy-handed, the only thought I had to that was, does Triple H know this, and was it his idea for her to get away with that? It goes back to what we discussed last week. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to agree with you. I think that the Steph was the best part in terms of, For my sake, the only thing that I could take from that and the entire thing, not even the segment, but the segments, was Steph's just obvious, like, I'm the one messing with you guys, but, you know, my bad.
It goes back to what we discussed last week on the Raw reaction as well, when we mentioned that it seemed kind of weird that the focus from the Brian heavyweight title situation had basically gone away from Triple H with him bringing back Evolution to Stephanie. And how Stephanie can't necessarily get her comeuppance in this storyline unless it's from Brie, and what are the odds of Stephanie ever having that happen?
Yeah, it's probably, I mean, you know, she called her a bitch, and a lot of people would seem to enjoy that. But yeah, I believe one comment on the Raw report had said that this better lead to a mixed tag with Brie and Brian against Kane and Stephanie. And it was tongue-in-cheek, of course, because I just simply don't see that happening. But it does bring up the question, like, what is this going to result into? Is Steph going to get beat up by Brie? Is Brie even a factor? Because she's nothing but annoying right now. You know, she's really bad at screaming. Really need to work on that, Brie. you know, like, and I remember, I mean, it immediately reminded me to the promo that AJ was making, and Brie and Nikki were talking, and there must have been a mic nearby because they were, you can hear them, and they were talking over the promo, and it was really, really annoying, and it just, I don't know if that's just the school of thought that they have, if they don't realize what they're doing, if they're just not cognizant of the reality of the situation or what they're trying to bring to the table, but whatever acting lessons they may have had, whatever they've worked on, they obviously need a little bit more help.
I remember the AJ promo in question. It was the AJ pipe bomb promo.
Yes. Yes, it was.
And, no, a bunch of us pointed it out then, too, is the only thing that Brie and Nikki were doing during that entire promo was undermining the entire severity of AJ's promo and the fact that AJ was stating, this is who I am, this is where I stand, this is why I'm against you.
Yes. Yeah, I just feel Nikki we haven't seen so much because can't say so much about her, but in terms of tonight, like instead of bringing worry to a storyline that was highly unlikely to bring some on its own, she kind of added to the ridiculousness of it, you know, screaming, let's go, and just overreaching a little bit. She did more without saying anything last week, with the exception of getting back into the ring, than she did tonight, where it just kind of came off as hokey.
I think the only thing she managed to do tonight is give Artie Reynolds something else to induct into Wrestle Crap.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not worried per se. I really do think that, like I said last week, this isn't going to be Kane wins so that someone else could win. Brian's need somebody. Kane was the most, you know, storyline-wise, it makes sense. All of it makes sense. And Steph unleashing the demon and whatnot, it all works. However, I just don't think they needed to go this route, per se. So I'm just hoping that they get it over with, they get it out of their system, Kane gets his hokey storyline of the year out of the way, and then he moves on to someone a bit more serious and a bit more, you know, more able to meet him at the story that they're trying to tell. Because right now they're deviating away from what they've built up for months, for almost a year. They're going away from that completely.
You know what scares me about this storyline as well?
What?
The fact that May 19th falls on a Monday this year.
Ah, shit. Yeah,
and the thought's not crossing your head too.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. I believe a commenter in the Raw report said something along the lines of this storyline being fucking dead on arrival. And I said the last bad storyline Kane had was someone fucking dead as well. And I hope that it doesn't result to a remembrance of, you know, one Katie Vick.
God. And hopefully Brian's not seeing any evil by the time this is over, too.
Yeah, let's just... I don't think they'll go that route, but they are going really cheesy. And you know, what's sad is that they want you to take it seriously with the mask on the door over a candle and everything. But you just can't when they have bad production like that. Like, it was a scary movie, like, on page 23 of Netflix. Like, it was one of those things where you're just like, what the hell is going on? Why is it taking so long for Brian to start the car? Didn't he just fix it? I don't know what's going on. Please stop it. like I said, I'm going to let it slide.
Really? 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 Really?
Really?
That was the only thing going through my mind the entire time.
Yeah, and it's I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it see where it goes. We got a month for them to kind of steer the train right. I don't want Brian to lose the momentum that he has built for so long. And And I want people to understand, I'm not one of those people that say that they're neutering his push, the crowd doesn't like him anymore, we're going to turn on him, blah, blah, blah. I don't fall into that camp at all. I still think he had a great match tonight with Del Rio. I still think that he can put on a great match. I think that he's a viable champion. I just think that the current storyline that he's in needs to expire or alter in such a way where we believe, you know, him.
Yeah, it's more of a case of they need to do it in such a situation where he doesn't come off as such a bitch.
Yes, because he hasn't been a bitch this entire time.
That's the long and the short of it to me anyways. I mean, you're basically cutting him off at the pass here by putting him into this storyline where he's selling all of this fear and all of this worry and stuff, and that's just not who Brian has been the entire time he's been in the WWE. At least
not at all.
At least that's how I'm looking at it. Anything else to touch on tonight, Tony?
You know, we're going to wrap it up here. I'm extremely hungry, but as far as Raw, maybe next week we'll implement as an actual rating system of some sort. As a 3-hour show, I do get tired. The fact that I have to type every single thing that happens for the 3 hours does make the show a little exhausting. And I'll actually talk about that next week, the difference between watching Raw as a fan and watching Raw as a recapper. And we can bounce off of each other that, you know, how that's different, why it's different, and what it makes you feel like as a fan. But in terms of tonight, I think that Raw was all right for the most part. I don't have too many complaints other than the ones that we've made already. So I'm hoping for the best, and I'm looking forward to next week.
Same here. I was going to say as well, I used to recap Raw as well. I used to do it when DeMarco had his own website up and running. I was the TV guy, and I would do Raw, SmackDown, and Impact all in the same week, and that just got to be too much for me. It was taking away my enjoyment as a fan. But,
exactly.
No, I can understand where you're coming from is the difference between watching as a fan and watching as a review guy, and we will get into that. We'll set that aside up because maybe we can do like a special segment where we take our experiences both with you recapping the shows as well as me sitting behind the table and calling shows. And we can work that into the experience of everybody at home as they enjoy Raw as well.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
All right. He's Tony Acero. I'm Harry Broadhurst. For the entire staff of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio as well as www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com, the Yes, Yes, Yes forum and 411 Mania as well, we want to thank you for joining us here for the Raw reaction, and we will see you next week. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.